This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, the Sandbox Party hopes to attract attention this year to issues affecting children as voters make decisions in the August primary and the November general election. But first, there is one proposal before voters in Michigan on the August ballot. It would repeal the personal property tax and direct state tax dollars to local units of government to make up for the revenue that they currently receive from that tax. That ballot proposal has no organized opposition. The Citizens Research Council of Michigan has prepared an analysis of Proposal 1. Eric Lufer is Research Director for the Citizens Research Council. Eric Lufer, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Explain the background of the personal property tax. How does this work?
The personal property tax is a tax on the things that aren't attached to the ground. We have two kinds of tax base for property taxes. The real property is the land and the buildings on it, and the personal property is everything that you put inside that building or things not attached. So in this case, we're mostly concentrated on industrial personal property. That would be the machinery that we put in to make the cars in Michigan, the machinery for making chairs and the things that go on the west side of the state. It's all industry is affected, and computers, desks, just about everything that a business would own for purposes of industrial production is considered industrial personal property.
So why is this tax unpopular with some members of the business community, and as well as many state lawmakers who have said that they support this proposal on the August ballot?
It's unpopular for a couple of reasons, and it's been unpopular for a long time. We have studies back in the 1960s that we were looking for ways to get rid of the personal property tax. The first reason is that it's the general principle, if you want something less of something, you should tax it. So if you want more of something, you should tax it less. It was seen as adverse to businesses if they were looking for a place to locate to engage in industry. This was a higher cost of operations, lower return on investment, and so for that reason it was unpopular. It was also seen as double taxation, so that when you purchased a computer, when you purchased a desk, when you purchased the machinery that was needed to engage in this activity, you would pay the sales tax on it. Then you put it in your factory, and you are taxed again as a personal property tax. So for those two reasons, it was not very popular.
So explain now what Proposal 1 on the August ballot will do about the personal property tax.
So the proposal that's been handed down by the legislature is to exempt industrial personal property from taxation. That doesn't affect the state government as much as it affects local governments, so they needed to find a way to reimburse local governments. In a convoluted system that was created because of the distrust between the state and local governments and a bad past history of fiscal relations between the two levels of government, they created a independent special unit of government that's ostensibly a local unit of government, but it shares its boundaries with the whole state. And that local unit of government would have taxing authority to come up with the money to reimburse local governments for their lost property taxes. It's not going to increase the amount of taxation that people pay. For every amount of increase in the use tax that this local government would levy, the state use tax rate would go down by an equal amount. So that's really the question that's before the voters. Do you want to levy this tax to reimburse local governments for lost personal property tax revenues? But everything else is tied to this vote, so that if the people vote no on this, the whole thing falls apart and we're back to taxing personal property and looking for another solution.
And just to explain the legalities here, why is a statewide vote required on this proposal?
So they called it, even though it's a shares its boundaries with the state, they created it under the authority in the local government section of the Michigan Constitution, and very clearly in the statute said this is not part of state government. In a different part of our state constitution, what we call the Headley Amendment, it says that any time a local unit of government is going to levy a tax, the people have to approve that. There must be a vote on it. So even though we've been paying the use tax all along, it's a state tax, they're calling it part of it now a local tax, and the Headley Amendment says the people have to vote before a local tax can be levied.
Your report includes a list of the local units of government that rely most heavily on the personal property tax, and that includes a couple of communities in southwest Michigan, Covert Township and Three Rivers. Is it fair to say that these communities have a larger stake in the August ballot question?
Well, again, they're going to be held harmless by this, whether they continue to levy the personal property tax on industry in their jurisdictions or that property becomes exempt and they're reimbursed by the state. Their revenue should be about revenue neutral. They shouldn't really suffer a loss from this. We put this table in to try to get people to understand really where the industrial property is located. And if the state should not live up to the bargain, these would be then the communities that would stand to be hurt by it. But the state's tried to put in some assurances that these communities, that the revenue will be there and these communities should not be hurt.
So where does the money come from in order to hold these local units of government harmless?
So as I said, we currently have a state use tax, and the idea is to divert part of that use tax to reimbursing local units of government. The state's counting on some more money coming in with tax credits that will expire and with a new tax. It's called a state essential services tax. So there will be some new money coming in, but it's taking money out of the state general fund, basically, money that would otherwise go into the state general fund and using it for reimbursement. So that's really the thing that people have to think about is they weigh whether to vote yes or no on this tax. Local governments should be held harmless. Things should keep on going at the local level as they have been. But at some point, there will be less money at the state. We think about $300 to $500 million that isn't paying for schools, for roads, for corrections, for all the things that the state government pays for.
So if that holds true, then does it mean that this ballot proposal is going to mean either cutting some state spending or raising revenue some other way to make up the difference?
Well, that's a bit of crystal ball gazing. The general purpose of cutting property taxes, personal property taxes, is to spur economic growth. If, in fact, that occurs, then this may pay for itself. But if it doesn't occur, then there will be those sort of hard questions for future legislative sessions. If the state does not have sufficient revenues to pay for the things it currently pays for, that'll either mean finding more money or cutting back on certain things.
Reading from the summary of the Citizens Research Council report, it says valid arguments have been advanced by supporters of the PPT repeal that the reforms will enhance business competitiveness and encourage additional private sector investment. Is the tough part when you're doing an analysis such as this one by the Citizens Research Council in determining how much new revenue will come in to see if it, in fact, will pay for itself? In other words, does that require crystal ball gazing, which is perhaps beyond the scope of what you or anybody else is capable of doing at this point?
Right. It's beyond the scope of us or anyone else, as you suggest. But it also, there are so many other wild cards. We know for the last decade that Michigan went into recession in 2001, along with the rest of the nation. The rest of the nation came out shortly after that, but Michigan continued in recession until the Great Recession of a few years ago. So while we think this will make Michigan a more business-friendly place, what happens to the rest of the economy? What happens to automotive purchases or business furniture purchases or anything else that is so important to Michigan? Those will play probably a bigger role than what's the amount of taxation on industrial personal property.
Earlier, we talked about some of the communities which rely most heavily on revenue from the personal property tax. If we broaden that out, though, and we look across the state, are there many communities where it's not a big factor one way or another?
Yes, there are far more communities that have no industrial personal property in their jurisdiction, and they get nothing from the personal property part of their tax base. They're simply receiving receiving real taxation on real property. So you can imagine the communities around Kalamazoo in that southwest part of the state that are just so heavily residential. And you would say those are communities, there is no industry really, and they're just going to go on as they have been going on. This won't affect them at all.
The report makes a couple of references, and I believe you've also stated this as well during this interview, about the strained fiscal relationship between the state and local units of government. Can you talk a little bit about what precisely that means and how that may have come into play when this proposal was being crafted?
So if you can go back to the 1930s when the state was taking action to exempt part of the property tax base from taxation and told local governments, if you go along with this, the state will send out money and you should be held harmless from it. That happened in the 30s. It happened years after that. It happened again in the 70s. And then we got to this last decade when, again, the state was dealing with this recession that just went on and on and on. And the state made a pattern of pulling back on the amount of money available for state revenue sharing at the expense of local governments. And so it really has created a strained relationship that the local governments just don't trust the promises made by the state administration or the state legislature will be kept in future years. When push comes to shove and the state needs money to fund things, will they say those needs are greater than the local government needs, and therefore we need to cut back on how much money is going to local governments? So you can imagine how this might have played out without such a strained relationship. The state might have told local governments, we understand you depend on this part of your property tax base. Let us exempt it. That'll be good for your tax base. More businesses will want to locate there. And in exchange, we'll send you the money through an appropriations process that'll get you what you need. But the local governments said, local government associations told the state, either you need to put this in the Constitution or you need to create a system where we have some certainty that that's money going to come. And so we're putting it to a vote of the people because of this complicated system they've created.
Eric Lufer, thank you for your time.
All right, glad to help.
Eric Lufer is Research Director for the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. The Citizens Research Council of Michigan's full report on Proposal 1 on the August ballot can be found at crcmich.org. A link is also available at our website, wmuk.org.